people in high places in the international area, especially at the UN, and filtering down all the way through the U.S. Department of Education, the Congress, back into our states, our state capitals, our education commissions of the states, all those organizations, all the way down to the local level, were in total control of our children through money, through the training and retraining of teachers to be basically not teachers, not of academics, but and the poor teachers, many got out because they did not go in to learn how to be psychiatrists and to brainwash children. That was not the purpose. That's not the purpose of the average teacher's pursuit of a career in teaching. But that's many got out, many stayed in, many tried to do their own thing behind closed doors. But now the situation is so pervasive now and unable to be dealt with due to the fact that the federal government has the teacher training criteria, and the students are being, teachers are being required to teach in a certain way and to the test. And that's the key right there. I said to the test. And when that happens, they judge the teacher's ability on how well the student does. And this is just criminal because, This controls, obviously, the curriculum. You teach what you're told to teach and how you're told to teach. And they're really not teaching. They're training. And they're using animal training methods. And that's Skinner or Pavlov. People understand that. Slobbering dogs. Using hand signals with children. Teach them phonics, how to read. And this is very dangerous to use these techniques on children or anybody for that matter. And we wonder why we have a nation of zombies and people who can't make connections, because it's not just the children that are getting it. We're getting the conditioning every night with the news, and the media does it to us, and our communities are doing it to us by rewarding us for doing good deeds. The police in our community give medals to citizens who do good deeds. That's, you know, that's the rewards and punishment. And we have become a nation of actually conditioned rats. And many people will say, well, I don't understand why the American people don't understand what's going on, or when I ask someone a question, they can't answer me. They can't go from here to there. They can't make connections between something that happened 50 years ago, and if they ever were taught it, and what's happening now. There's no ability to use the mind. It's just everything is bypassing the brain.
Well, Charlotte, before you go any further, because you're touching on one of the subjects I really wanted to get into. I also, for those who may not have heard part one, I just wanted to say that three of the main focus today, which Charlotte talked about on part one, which if you've ever had the chance to please listen to that, is the mandatory mental health screening, which is very important here, the shamanic ritualism in effective schools, and, of course, experimentation with minorities, deliberate dumbing down for a planned economy. And what Charlotte is talking about right now is one of the main things I kind of wanted to go into. In your book, Charlotte, you mentioned a quote from a book titled Conditioned Reflex Therapy by Andrew Salt, which goes into what you're saying right now. Prior to that quote, you said, individual free will, freedom of choice, and, of course, individual responsibility are categorically denied in these words. And here's the quote. We are meat in which habit have taken up residence. We are the result of the way other people have acted to us. We are the reaction. Having conditioned reflexes mean carrying out pieces of past realities. We think with our habits, and our emotional training determines our thinking. Where there is a conditioned reflex, there is no will. Our willpower is dependent on our previously learned reflexes. That's the end of quote. You went on to state that transforming the individual under this spell of persuasion or compulsion into an individual possessing entirely different characteristics from those formerly exhibited, and thus whole new social, economic, political, and even religious regimes have been accepted in a comparatively short time. I find this very interesting. And then you also talked about the art of cybernetics. So while you're going into all of that, I wanted to make sure I bring that up so that you could speak of that, the art of cybernetics, the so-called mental health screening, which is involved in all of what you're saying, which is the taking of one's will. So if you can explain this a little bit more, cybernetics and the concept of mental health screening and where it is all leading.
Well, the mental health, actually the concept of mental health screening has been around for too long. And I do go back, there's a marvelous book, I think it's on, and people can get this little booklet, it's at AmericanDeception.com. It's not on my Deliberate Dumbing Down website. It is at AmericanDeception.com, I believe. And it's written by Dennis Cuddy. But basically what I'm going to ask your listeners to do, this is better, go to, get your pencils out and everything, go to newswithviews.com. And it's a wonderful website with many, many articles by great Americans who are now concerned about what's going on, have been for many years. Many are great researchers. And they're writing on different issues. And one of the individuals is a very close associate of mine. And he worked in the U.S. Department of Education when I did. And his name is Dr. Dennis L. Cuddy, C-U-D-D-Y. And when you go to newswithviews.com, type in, you'll look over to the left, you're going to have a lot of names of writers, including myself, but I'm not asking you to go to my articles yet. Go to Dennis Cuddy and click, and his articles will pop up. There'll be a list of them. And I believe the last, what you really want to look at here are the articles that are dealing with the National Mental Health Program. And this program is... has taken place, actually, it's been in the works for many, many years. In fact, the Soviets back in the 30s were deeply involved, and in the 40s was recommending that mental health be used. That's the excuse, right? Mental health and psychiatric treatment, et cetera, be used, screening, setting up clinics, et cetera, all over the United States, in order to change Americans' thinking. And that's true. That's a true thing. And that was a speech by Beria, leading psychopolitician, head of the secret police, actually. And he gave a speech in the 30s and to American students. And they came over, and with very left-wing persuasion. These students already had left-wing persuasions. But the speech he gave is remarkable, and I'm sure, and Dennis, I've got it right here. We may deal with it later on, but I want to point out that this is when it really started, the focus on mental health. And then it moved up to World War II when Alger Hiss, who was a communist, forming the United Nations, the Charter, and his cohort, Brock Chisholm, a general, Canadian general and a psychiatrist, worked together. And Chisholm called for, and this is important because of what you were just saying, very clear back then. They didn't mince words. He said, we've got to get rid of the conscience, you know, the decision of individuals to decide what's right or wrong themselves as individuals, not as a group. We have to get rid of the conscience, and he recommended that that be done through the schools and that the teachers be retrained as little psychiatrists. And all this is in my book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, as well. But Dennis Cuddy goes into it, and I think your listeners have got to understand that, for instance, President George Bush's initiative in 2002, April 29, 2002, was just the the final blow, the implementation of the program that Beria really called for back in the 30s in the speech to the American students, telling them to go back to the United States, get mental health clinics set up all over the country. He goes on and on, too. He talks about rock music, the importance of that. He talks about pornography, just to break down our whole social system. And so what happens? So along comes George Bush. He sounds like he must have been in touch with George Orwell, really. I mean, it's amazing how this president of ours uses extraordinary words. Like, he calls this his freedom initiative, if you can believe it. It's the New Freedom Commission on Mental Health. I wish that someone could really explain to me what is free about this commission. Anyway, I'm reading out of Dennis Cuddy's first little book on this, and he says, on April 29, 2002, President George W. Bush established the New Freedom Commission on Mental Health, which developed a number of recommendations, among which was mental health screening for Americans, especially children. President Bush has instructed 25 federal agencies to develop a plan to implement the National Freedom Commission on Mental Health recommendations. On September 7, 2004, the U.S. House of Representatives introduced H.R. 506, which was later rolled into the larger H.R. 4818, which on December 8, 2004, became Public Law 108-447. You can pull that up on the Internet if you're on the computer. In this law, Division F, Title II state, concerns substance abuse and mental health services, which provides funds for mental health data collection and evaluation activities. Now, since it was logical to assume this could include mental health screening, U.S. Representative Ron Paul, who my family certainly has supported, and many, many other good Americans understand that he really was the only candidate to support, he tried to amend the earlier legislation, H.R. 506, to exclude such screenings, but he was defeated. Now, this tells you something about our Congress, too, okay? Later, he tried to amend legislation at least to require parental permission before such screenings could occur. However, he was once again defeated. This has logically resulted in the conclusion that Congress indeed does want to allow funds from this public law to be used for mental health screening of children, perhaps even without parental permission. To try to overcome this, Representative Paul introduced H.R. 181 into the 109th Congress, and the legislation is titled to prohibit the use of federal funds for any universal or mandatory mental health screening program. And Dennis covers this at newswithyous.com. It's the website.com and then /Cuddy/Dennis20.htm. Now, that's basically what we're looking at. I want your listeners to remember, because they may be sitting back comfortably in their chairs, they may be in their 50s or 60s or 80s, I don't know what, but they're saying, oh, well, that doesn't mean us. You know, of course, maybe they're saying that's perfectly horrible that little children should have mental health screening and have all this information on their families and what's going on and mommy and daddy's fighting and drugs in the house and all this and that. This is terrible that this is going into a data bank and the results are being merged with other results with other children. And actually what they're doing is they're creating a profile of certain children in certain communities, and they are predetermining through this screening what kind of medication these children are going to be mandated to have. And I've done quite a bit more research on this and gotten into another project that's frightening, and it's terribly frightening. It's The Last Death, where they really are looking to develop the new Soviet man. They want to create their own, it's disgusting, it's Hitler, it's eugenics. And this screening is going to lead to determining personalities. These horrible people up high feel that they are in a position of trust, and that we are upset about behavior of children, perhaps in the very fancy schools in Greenwich, Connecticut, where the wealthy kids in the public schools are taking drugs, and all this is going on with the wealthy. They're also concerned with the inner city children, the behavior there, with the shootings at Columbine, et cetera, et cetera. So they're saying, we're doing you a great favor, America. We're doing your children a great favor. We are going to create new people who won't be this way. This is horrifying. And people can say, oh, that couldn't possibly be going on. It is. Let me assure you, it is going on in the research labs, how to do this and how even to affect the child in the womb genetically. Now, if that doesn't scare the pants off all of us, nothing does. Because to me, I think that I was saying to you, I was tired, Sonia.
Mm-hmm.
I think since I found out about this whole thing, basically the follow-up to Bush's screening and all this, all the pharmaceutical companies that are involved in Bush's program, it's frightening. But when I found out about this major thing, and I've been doing a lot of work on it, we're still quite keeping a lot of it from the public, right? It just dragged me down. I mean, it absolutely dragged me down. I often thought maybe I'd seen the worst in what they're doing to our children. But when I saw this, and I see what's coming down the pipe, and you will hear more about it because we're working on it, and it's going to come out. But this is what has dragged me down to the point where I am totally stressed out and tired, and I'm sickened, and everybody better be sickened, because they are going to have access to our children. It doesn't make any difference what you say, Mom and Dad. If they find out that they do some testing in the school's mental health screening, and they determine that your child is autistic, or your child is hyperactive, or your child is one thing or the other, they will very kindly, you know, they will call you in, and they'll say, Mrs. Jones, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but your child has this problem, and we're concerned. But we really do have an expert on board now who's come on board, special person going into the schools. And usually it's a very attractive young woman who's sweet and knows how to deal with the public. Don't worry about these things. You know, we can take care of it, and we'll recommend you to your private doctor. Now, that is when the parents really feel secure, if they have a private doctor or they have a government doctor or whatever. And so they contact the private doctor, and they're in cahoots with the private medical system. And so then when the private doctor says, oh, well, you know, this would be a good medication, or, you know, it used to be Ritalin everybody worried about, but now it's all sorts of other horrible things, the parents fall for it. And then, of course, they put them on these medications, and then they keep measuring what happens with the behavior, whether it improves or it doesn't improve, and they merge all the data from all the children, all different socioeconomic groups around the country, et cetera. And, of course, this is basically a pilot that's being put in right now. It's not going to be all the schools yet. It's always that way with the government. And then they figure out how they can really create, through drugs that are coming through the pipeline now, not the old psychiatric ones, create a perfect little baby in the womb. I know people out there probably think I'm nuts. I hope I'm not making you as sick as I am.
You know what, Charlotte? Let me tell you, I just have to chime in on that. Listeners, she's not nuts, because after talking to Charlotte the last time, I went to do some research. I was doing some research anyway. But what I found out, and I wanted to say, and regarding this mandatory mental health screen, and is everything that Charlotte is saying, it was mind-boggling. What was the other thing? Oh, yes. Let's see. How much it ties into eugenics. That's what I discovered, is how much everything that Charlotte was saying tied into eugenics. And for those of you who might not be familiar with eugenics, it involves selective breeding, sterilization, biological manipulation, etc. And the study of eugenics goes back to Germany around, what, the 1800, 1871 or something. And I myself am also putting an article together involving that information and tying it in. So what Charlotte is saying is very true, and it dates far back. This is not just in the last 100 years. This stuff dates far back. So Charlotte, just wanted to say that so the listeners know that you're not making this up. And please go ahead with what you're saying.
That's the thing. I mean, when I heard stuff like this back 30 years ago, as I said in the beginning, I really didn't want to believe it because it is so outrageous that you just figure that. Actually, I think maybe they make things so outrageous, so terribly outrageous that nobody will ever believe anybody, no
that's
matter
true.
What they, you know, that's their whole goal. So I do hope, it doesn't mean I don't want all your listeners to think that, you know, they've got children in the school right now who are being experimented on this way. They will be, generally speaking, across the board. They are going to have the mental health screening, right? And that will happen, and it is happening right now. It is happening right now.
But it's no different than, yeah. Sorry, Charlotte, but it's no different than, I remember when we were kids, when they were coming to the schools and giving vaccinations back then.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and this was global, because I was living in Jamaica then when it happened. I mean, I was in the 60s, late 60s or so. And, so this was across the board. We all have these little marks on our shoulders. I don't know how it is these days, but back then you ended up with a scar on your shoulder from the vaccinations. I don't know what they gave us back then. I mean, who knows? So it's the same thing.
Yes, it absolutely is. And, you know, you were talking about there's a wonderful book, Mental Robots. That was it. I think that's, I quote from it in my book.
Yes, you do. You quote from it in your book.
Lewis Allison. And he says, this is back in 1957, he was a doctor, former president of the California Medical Association. He said, Americans today, this is way back, are being deluged with propaganda under the disarmingly innocent title of the Mental Health Program. Its robotry objectives, the ultimate destruction of the human individual as a person, the eradication of all the traditions, ideals, and moral concepts which he has learned from home, church, and school, and taught to deny and reject responsibility for himself, and to transfer that responsibility to the group. That is the state. The state, like USA, the state government. The master plan has been the result of thousands of individuals who have not had the time or the ability to gain a perspective of the ultimate aims of the plan, which they have actively aided in bringing to fruition. Summer sessions and group dynamics under the direction of a subdivision of the National Education Association with a fundamental objective to prepare those so trained in the subtle art of propagandizing without seeming to do so. And Dennis goes into a lot of this stuff, and I think the mental health, the public school is really a psychiatric clinic now. People wonder, I don't know when Americans are going to understand that, why don't they see any improvement in academic skills, considering the fact that so much money has been spent over the years, ever since certainly 1965, when the federal government really got involved. It's been billions and billions, and the more they spend, the more devastating are the academic results. And I might point out, and I think your listeners know this, the more devastating are the behavioral results. So, isn't it, what doesn't make sense to ask this question? Is it possible that this is deliberate? Because if it's not, wouldn't the people in power, the state superintendents, the NEA, the different groups, the U.S. Department of Ed, where I worked, if they keep seeing this decline in test scores as they're putting money in, wouldn't they start focusing more on academics? No, they're not. There's nothing going on in the classroom anymore, dear parents out there, that deals with your child learning the basic skills that will give him or her the upward mobility to become a productive individual for his family and all, not for the state. There's no excuse for this. I always say, if you can't read, you can't defend yourself.
Right.
You can't defend yourself in any way. And they targeted reading all the way along. They never wanted, John Dewey never wanted, and he was a major communist, John Dewey, the head of, the big honcho educator. They didn't want you. They're smart. If I were a communist and I didn't want people to read and I wanted to take the country, I'd make sure people can't read.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did. So they used all these horrible methods of teaching reading, and they got caught several times, as you know. You saw my research in the book. They got caught with their mastery learning in the inner city in Chicago, where half the students, the inner city kids, dropped out.
Charlotte, one second, Charlotte. I just want to give out the phone number and make it known that we're coming in live. You're listening to Inner Light Radio and the show Sovereign Mind radio program. The phone number is 310-928-7733, or you can also email questions to innerlightradio@yahoo.com. And we're speaking with our guest, Charlotte Izerbeed.
Yeah, so that should have been, we're going back to spending all this billions of dollars. Top professor Benjamin Bloom, this is in 1968, whenever he got that money, about 68 or 70. He's the professor. All teachers have to go through his training, Bloom's taxonomy. He's a behaviorist. He believes in training children, like dogs. I hope people understand. Skinner said, I could make a pigeon a high achiever by reinforcing it on a proper schedule. And Bloom said the purpose of education, this is the guy who put the project into Chicago, inner city schools in 1970, and half the inner city children dropped out after 12 years, or in eighth grade, they dropped out. This is Bloom, and very famous. He said the purpose of education is not, it's not to educate your children in academics. He said it is to change the thoughts, actions, and feelings of students. And he said he defined good teaching as challenging the student's fixed beliefs. And he also went on to say, if you give me a child for 1 hour, I can take him from a belief in God to a belief in nothing.
Mm.
So this is powerful, powerful stuff that
yes,
our teachers
is.
Have been retrained to do this. They don't like it. Most teachers probably hate it. This is outcomes-based education. This is no child left behind. It is performance-based. Now, think of the word performance. Now, look, when you take your child to school in first grade, is your goal for your child to be able to perform?
Mm.
Or is your goal for your child to learn the alphabet, to learn how to count, to learn how to do his multiplication tables, to know some history, to be able to read, to be able to spell. That is not performing. That's learning.
Right.
There's a big difference between learning and training, between teaching and training. What they did, They changed the education under Lyndon Johnson, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, 1965. They changed it from learning academics to behavior modification training, so that children will be nothing but human resources for the workforce. Now it's the global workforce. They don't care about your child's future. They care about the bottom line for the international corporations. That's money. Making money. They don't care about us. They don't care about American corporations, if there are any left. They care about the bottom line, and they're going to make lots of money that way off of your children, and they will be taught limited skills, only for what they've determined. This is a Soviet polytech system, or the Cuban one, or the Chinese one, or the whatever. That's what we're putting in, and I saw it after I was dismissed from my job in U.S. Department of Education for leaking a document on this very subject. After I was dismissed, then Ronald Reagan, who was supposed to be this great savior of the United States and all of us, right, who was going to get rid of the U.S. Department of Education, he signed a major agreement with the president of the Soviet Union, Mikhail Gorbachev, which merged the two education systems. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, if we're going to have a one-world socialist economic system, we've got to merge with the Soviets. We've got to adopt their system because it's an economic system. And since it's an economic system, what are you going to do? You're going to teach them classics and academics? No. You're going to train them like little rats. And that's exactly what happened. And they don't want your children to have. I know that. I have the book by David Hornbeck and Lester Solomon. Hornbeck went into Philadelphia public schools. Absolute tragedy. After he blew up, destroyed the public schools, restructuring them in Kentucky, he went to Philadelphia. And he did an even better job on the inner city schools. Absolutely blew them to pieces. And restructured them so that they're learning. It's a tragedy, Philadelphia, okay? Chicago is a tragedy. I mentioned that in my book. But one could say these people, because Hornbeck, he and Dave and Lester Solomon wrote a book called Human Capital. Hornbeck, this is the very person with the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching and all. He said in that book, and I hope people are listening,
mm-hmm.
The corporations do not want educated people. Now, haven't you all been told that's just the opposite?
Absolutely.
Haven't you all been told that the corporations are all upset because the kids can't multiply or divide, they can't write, they can't... Oh, really? No, they don't want it. And they go on to say because educated people ask too many questions and they quit their jobs, etc. So, when you're told by your school superintendent that they're giving your child a really good education so he can get a job, you know, just turn your ears the other way or say whatever you want to say. Huh? Folks, look, you haven't got a chance in that system anymore because, as I said, the teacher is being judged according to your child's test results.
But Charlotte, I wanted to say this as well, but with this entire process in place, though, the whole idea, as you just said, the whole concept then of education, if that is changing or if that has changed, then those who enter into, say, college anyway, that whole system is still going to be different. So that, I mean, so the whole educational process or the whole concept is changing anyway. So when you go in, it is going to what you are, however you're being educated anyway, is going to reflect all of this other system. So it's a whole different sense of being educated even when one is considered educated.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, last night was an interesting evening. I mean, I happened to watch Larry King, and they had, Ventura, you know, the former governor of Minnesota was on.
Yeah.
You've heard of him, haven't you?
Right.
And, he was very interesting. And I thought, good grief, how nice to have someone up there who, is telling it straight. What kind of an education Ventura had. I think he was a boxer before he became governor of Minnesota. He spoke very well. He made sense. He wasn't an intellectual, trying to show his colors like a university president or some consultant for one of the three candidates. I call the three, our choices are very pathetically limited. We don't even have a candidate, right, to vote for. and their consultants, you take McCain's top person was, you know, the top person in the campaign, Hillary Clinton and Obama, all three of them. And I looked at Jared, you asked me a question about what happens. Yeah, they go through, they get through college, and they go into the university. Nothing changes. These people think they're very smart. They think they're highly educated. These are the intellectuals who are telling us that we should be voting for Hillary, McCain, or Obama. And yet they don't discuss anything in their campaigns. There is no issue that's being discussed, basically. Nobody's finding out anything. But Ventura, who I'm sure has not got that great an education, he made sense. And I could see it. I could see this is an individual. I'm not saying I agree with him on everything. I don't know whether, actually, he was even talking about running for president. And he was talking about having Ron Paul as his vice president. This is unbelievable. On Larry King last night, that was really good news. 80% of the people who, voted in a little poll that Larry King had, should Ventura run for president? 80% said yes. Because the American people, getting back to your discussion right there, we are sick and tired of these intellectuals telling us who aren't intellectual, basically. They are really dumbed down people. And they're telling us how we should vote. And we don't have any choice. And there are no issues being discussed. And as Ventura said, I am making a political statement, but Ventura said, why don't we have a box at the end? You can vote for Obama, Hillary, or McCain, right? And then at the bottom it says, none of the above. And he asked these intellectuals, the ones you're talking about who got into the university after having brainwashed in elementary and secondary, he asked them, what about that? Don't you think that's a great idea? He asked them three times. They would not answer. He also said, let's get rid of both parties. We don't want any political parties anymore because they're both the same. Now, that's the kind of guy I want. And he is obviously, he's got the basics. And his brain is still functioning.
Yeah, because he didn't go through the system. He didn't completely go through the educational system.
No, his brain is functioning. Maybe he didn't go to college.
That's what I mean. He didn't.
I really would like to make a point of that. Because there are a lot of people, maybe your listeners out there too, who are thinking in terms of their children going to college. Don't get hung up on that. Don't get hung up on it. I remember William Bennett, who is not my favorite person, but a former Secretary of Education. I didn't like him at all because he was all involved in a lot of this stuff. But he made one comment once, and he said, if I were a young parent, I would, when the minute the baby's born, I would start putting pennies, nickels, whatever, dollars into a little piggy bank. And every week we'd be putting money in a piggy bank until my child was, 11th grade or whatever, hopefully having gone through maybe homeschooling or private school, or maybe at that time there was a public school left. And then what do you do with it? It's not for college. It's for my child to go out and start his own business.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, but that's not encouraged. Being an entrepreneur is something that is not encouraged.
No, because we all have to be members of the collective.
Absolutely.
Nobody's meant to, no competition, that's outcomes-based education. There is no competition whatsoever. In fact, they have the cooperative learning, where the bright kids who worked hard, and some are particularly bright, don't even have to work, but those children are all dragged down to the lowest common denominator. And the ones at the bottom, the ones on the bottom who haven't done any work at all and get bad grades, they get all the grades thrown in together and it's a group grade. Horrible.
Yeah.
This is the communist system. A lot of people don't know that. I had a woman from Russia in the audience once when I was speaking, and she had been back. I was talking about cooperative learning, what we're just talking about right now, and no grades and all that stuff, and group grades, and no competition, and having to depend on the next person to always survive. And she put her hand up and she said, I just want to tell the audience here, Mrs. Enderby, that what you're saying is absolutely correct, and that's the Soviet system. And she said, I just returned to Russia to visit my family, and this is a good example of how it works. And she said that we had a fire in the house, and everybody just sat there because they don't know how to do anything as individuals. They all sat there while the fire was from a pot in the kitchen, and it was burning. She went and grabbed a coverlet or something, and ran in and put it out. And she said, this is what you're going to get if you continue. You're going to have a bunch of collectivists, people like sheep. They're not going to take the initiative to ever cure, take care of a problem, solve a problem, or anything. And this is what we're looking at right now with Americans. Look at the sheep out there.
You know, a listener just sent in. It's more of sort of a statement. It's from Sammy in Memphis, Tennessee, and Sammy says, "Good morning. Let's face it, as America's economy deteriorates and expectations remain the same, the social structure of the public, so values must be changed through education."
Well, he's pretty smart. I missed the middle part of it. You said that after the social structure, what did he say?
It says expectations remain the same. The social structure understands that they could be facing a disgruntled public, so values must be changed through education.
Absolutely. I mean, maybe sounds like the guy in Memphis has probably been in education somewhere along the line, because that's exactly it. This is to keep the Indians from rebelling, right? And, it's true. They have to do that. And, you know, way back prior to the Russian Revolution, one of the leaders, he was a communist, Jacob Moreno, who came to the United States and developed a lot of horrible psychological programs for our schools. But he wrote in a book that, if the Russians, the communists in Russia in the early part of the 1900s, if they had worked in the schools to condition the students to the need for the revolution, they wouldn't have had all of the problems with the dissidents after, like Solzhenitsyn and all the various Russians that, you know, got in trouble and were sent off to the camps or the Lubyanka prison, who had psychiatric, had medicines injected in them and all, because they were objecting. And he said that we should have used the schools to condition them so that they would never, so they would not resist and rebel against the new order. And that's pretty much exactly what your listener is really saying. The schools have been used to bring bring the American people to the point where they, you know, they don't care. They'll say, what's wrong with that?
Well, absolutely, because in 10 years, 15, 20 years, yes, we're going to see the results on a deeper level of all of this, because those children will become adults and they will have children and they will put them through the same grinder without realizing what's going on.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's Sonia, I did at one time refer you to my article, The Devil's Seven-Pronged Fork, didn't I?
I don't think so.
Well, it's important for people because it explains how this whole agenda has been brought to the point where we are today, and it's pretty scary, admittedly, and how they did it. It had to be an evil agenda, because I don't believe anybody, no matter how brilliant, could have put this one over on a whole society. But they did it very, very, very evil. And it is at my website, that article, Deliberate Dumbing Down. If you people click on articles, it's called The Devil's Seven-Pronged Fork. And, I finally had to write that article because I got tired of beating up on the audiences I was talking to about, hey, wake up, folks. Look, we're losing it. We're losing it for your children, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, well, you know, maybe there's another way to go about this. And I figured it out. Actually, the average American, you can't totally blame him for allowing us to get to the point where we're about to go down. It's been through the use of seven prongs, the devil's seven-pronged fork. And one is gradualism, like the frog in the cold water, right? And you can say 150 years ago when you were talking about the work with eugenics, or John Dewey in the early part of the last century, or Brock Chisholm, who said we've got to get rid of the conscience, you know, and here we are up at 2008. Hey, we are, aren't we? And, so that, the frog is thrown in, say, in 1850. And they heat the water up gradually. We're the frog. And the frog doesn't know what's going on. And finally, we're all toast. And that was terribly important. Then the other thing was the dialectic. And that's a word that people often, they wonder what on earth you're talking about, but it's a terribly important word. And I'll just explain what it is. It was conceived, the dialectical theory method was conceived by German philosopher Hegel. And if you want to get something, and you know that people are going to rebel if you tell them the truth about what you want, you create a problem, and then you get the people to scream and yell, whether it's taxes or whatever, and then you can impose any solution.
And absolutely.
What you want, and they'll accept it. I often said, to explain this to people, clearly once this was true, I did this with my husband's laundry, I put a red sweater in with his white shirt. And he ended up with pink shirts, and I ended up with a very small red sweater in hot water. And my husband said to me, okay, you know, that's pretty bad. I don't do my laundry anymore. And my sons, also two boys, they were young then, they heard it, and they saw it, and they said, okay, Mom, me too. Don't touch our laundry. And so what I'm saying, this is a true story. I never have had to do their laundry since. Now, what if I had not wanted to do the laundry for the men? The best thing I could possibly do was what I unknowingly did. Put a red sweater in with their white shirts.
Well, this is the same thing that's going on with the healthcare thing. Well, everybody is screaming for healthcare, and they are letting them drag it out as far as they can go until finally they go, okay, we're going to give you what you want now.
Exactly, and I don't think there's any problem, and I often say this when I'm speaking. I ask the audience, I say, look, you tell me one major problem the United States is facing or what's going on in your city or whatever, a major, serious problem that has not been deliberately created. And I say, I'll give you $1,000. And I've been doing this for 20 years, and I have never had anybody willing to, you know, say there is a problem that hasn't been deliberately created in order to get what they want gradually, okay? Then you go after that as a dialectic, then you go to the big bucks, always because of the Federal Reserve. I mean, there's always this Mickey Mouse money that's endless. You could spend billions and billions on education, which is brainwashing, and never get any academics out of it, or any other area. There's always endless money. Then you have the controlled media. And we have a very good example of that with David Rockefeller, who is one of the top people at the international level creating this horrible new order, where he talked to at a trilateral commission meeting in Europe about 6 years ago. It was in Germany, and he was talking to the media. It was a closed meeting, really quite secret, but someone was in there who got the word out. And he thanked the media for keeping all their activities and their agenda secret from the American people. He thanked the New York Times, the Washington Post, all of them, for keeping it secret from us, because they never could have come so close to the New World Order, accomplishing their objectives with a world socialist totalitarian government, had the media not cooperated with them. Now, that is the truth. That's true.
Unbelievable. Charlotte, before you go any further, I want to make sure I ask you this question, and it relates to everything that you're talking about right now, but there's an article that you wrote, Preparing Children for a Virtual World Classroom, and in it you stated that the restructured American education system is part of the international lifelong computerized workforce training system. Computerization of the classroom is the model for the international system to which all the world's children and adults will be subjected and brainwashed. And I'm skipping pieces because we don't have enough time. And then you said Bush administration strongly supports the United Nations educational, scientific, and cultural organizations' plans for world education, which is brainwashing and training. So I kind of went, and you basically said that this was all based on Skinner. So I wanted to kind of have you touch on the virtual concept a bit further, the United Nations plan, which a lot of people don't understand what that's about, United Nations plans for world education, and the connection of the No Child Left Behind, because you also mentioned that in here.
Yes, well, basically you go back to UNESCO, go back to 1945 when the UN was created, and then I think UNESCO was created in 1948. And their declaration was sort of the same thing, education for all. UNESCO, they were very clear in stating that the parents really should not have any control over their own children, that the state should be in charge, and all schools should be internationalized, and teachers taught according to the United Nations philosophy, agenda, concept of a one world government, and with a humanistic curriculum which does not allow for God or any belief system. It's totally atheistic, which is with a value system that is tolerant of all behaviors, lifestyles, whatever. And this curriculum has been adopted definitely by the National Education Association. And even in 1976, I think that was they really thought they were going to bring this down in 1976. So folks out there, it's great you've got Sonia and you've got me and a lot of other people who have understood how serious this situation is and have been fighting for years and have kept it from happening before now. I mean, we could have gone down in the mid-70s because at that time, you're asking about UNESCO, and there was a declaration of interdependence that was signed in Philadelphia by about 85 congressmen, believe it or not. That declaration was drafted by a very well known educator by the name of William Steele Cominger, and in it it discussed the need to redistribution of the world's resources, which is Marxism, communism, and if you can imagine, American congressmen signing this statement. And at that time, this is all out of the UN, and at that time, the NEA adopted a curriculum to implement this agenda. And many of the schools had that curriculum. I might point out that the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching, which is David Hornbeck and all the different people involved in No Child Left Behind, also gets its orders from the UN. All this stuff really is in my book. Between World War One and World War Two, you will see the involvement of the tax-exempt foundations and